First, I'll ask whether any group brought a food to test today.
I have a bar.
You what?
I have a granola bar.
All right. So one group. I didn't announce this, but you're supposed to be reading ahead. The clueless groups still have food to use over here. So every group can still use a food, but pick different foods. I don't want every group doing the same thing. Okay? Anyway, we're starting a 2-week exercise to determine whether these test foods are genetically modified, whether they're GM or whether they're GMOs, genetically modified organisms. And just let me just say that we've been genetically modifying plants for millennia, right? Thousands of years. That's what agriculture is. Agriculture is artificial selection, because we determine which individuals get crossed with other individuals. We determine what kind of individuals survive and which ones don't. We apply the selection pressure, in other words, artificially, and that modifies the genome of the plants over time. But nowadays, when we use the phrase genetic modification, we usually mean that the organism is transgenic, meaning that a gene has been taken from some organism, likely entirely unrelated to the recipient organism, and put into a recipient organism so that it now is able to make a protein it wasn't able to make before because it has the instructions. That's what the gene is, right? So the genetically modified organism can make a new protein, and that gives it some new quality. That's what we mean nowadays by genetically modified organism. And a lot of plants are genetically modified that we use for food, so that's why we're testing them. To answer that question of whether they are genetically modified or not really boils down to asking, is there any DNA in this plant DNA that should not be here naturally? That no naturally occurring plant has any business having in its genome? That's really the question we're asking. And to answer that question, to detect DNA that really shouldn't be in any plant, we have to have enough DNA to work with in order to detect it. And so that's why we're using an amplification technique, so that we can multiply greatly the number of copies of DNA that we extract directly from the plant, from the food, and have a hell of a lot of identical copies of it so that we can detect it. What is that amplification technique? It is PCR, which is acronymous for what? Polymerase chain reaction, correct. The polymerase chain reaction is used for all kinds of things. It's basically used any time you need a lot more copies of DNA than you have on hand, for whatever reason. It just happens to be that we need it in order to answer this question about genetic modification. All right, so we can't answer the question today. All we're doing is setting up the PCR process so that next week we'll have enough DNA on hand to be able to answer the question of whether it's genetically modified or not. All right, when we do an electrophoretic trial. All right, so let me just talk a little bit about PCR. Very valuable tool because it makes identical copies of DNA. Therefore, if you have a sample, just barely have a sample, you can really make as much of that as you want because DNA copies itself exactly. And the reason DNA copies itself exactly is because of two major reasons. It's double-stranded. But beyond that, the two strands are strictly complementary to each other, right? Which is why if you separate those two strands, each individual strand can be used as a template using complementarity rules for how to build another copy of the other strand. This is exactly what happens in a cell, right? And that's why a cell that's about to split into two cells will have two identical copies of the genome, one to give to each of the two daughter cells. So a polymerase chain reaction really is just a laboratory way of duplicating in solution, in other words, just as chemicals in solution rather than in a cell, what naturally happens in a cell. What are the two major functions of DNA? Transcription and replication. And the one that PCR mimics is replication. All right, so let's talk about the process, but then I'll compare how it really is similar to what goes on naturally in a cell. The PCR is a chain reaction because it is cyclic, and the cycles are repeated some number of times. In other words, there's some number of iterations of the cycle. Each cycle has the same thing going on inside it, but it's repeated several times, typically about 40 times. That's what we will do. It's a pretty easy process nowadays. When they were devising this, they had to do it by hand in test tubes. It was laborious. But once they got the process figured out, it nowadays is computerized. You have a nice compact machine called a thermal cycler. You put your samples in, set it, and forget it. Come back later and get your replicated DNA. So we set it up. This program uses 40 iterations of the cycle. That's a common number to use, but you can program any number you want. Each iteration, though, each individual cycle has three important things happening in it, three steps. Anyone know what those steps are?
Elongation is the last one,
so we'll end there.
Annealing is the second one.
Yeah, denaturation is the first step in each cycle. And in general, what does denaturation refer to? Disrupting a molecule, right? When you apply the word to protein, denaturation of a protein means changing its shape drastically so it no longer has its tertiary structure. And therefore, that protein no longer does whatever it's supposed to do. This is exactly what happens in cooking, right? When you cook a hunk of meat, for instance, if you cook a hunk of meat, which has a hell of a lot of protein in it, it drastically changes the texture. And that's because the heat has denatured those proteins. And notice that if you can't just decide you didn't really want the steak and let it cool down to room temperature, it's not going to turn into a raw steak again because because you put it back to the right temperature. In other words, the denaturation is permanent, right? Well, we're not talking about proteins here. We're talking about DNA. What does denaturation of DNA refer to? Yes, it refers to breaking the hydrogen bonds, which means separating the two strands from each other. What we call one DNA molecule, technically speaking, is two molecules, right? It's two separate, very long polynucleotides, each a molecule in its own right, but they are held to each other by hydrogen bonds because of the complementarity of their sequences. And so it's a double-stranded DNA. Unzipping it, separating the two strands from each other, is what denaturation is. That's the first step. If you don't do that, you can't use either strand as a code for as a template for how to build a new strand. What does annealing refer to, which is the second step? No, annealing refers to hydrogen bonds forming between two strands that are complementary. Now, if you denatured DNA and then just left it alone, it would renature. The two strands would come back together because they're complementary. We don't want that to happen because that just undoes what we're doing in the first step. But in the mixture, in the solution that we're using, there are other pieces of DNA that will bind to a complementary sequence on the sample DNA that has been denatured. All right? That's what annealing refers to. Formation of hydrogen bonds between complementary sequences of DNA. Now, let me just finish up the three. Elongation then refers to actually building the new strand one DNA nucleotide at a time. All right? So that makes up one cycle. And then that cycle is repeated, like I said, in our case, 40 times. Well, before I compare this to what happens in a cell naturally, let me say that PCR does not amplify the entire sample that you extract from wherever it is, comes from. In other words, the entire DNA molecule is not copied, not replicated in PCR. To use PCR, you have to, first of all, be looking specifically for something in that DNA. It might be there, it might not. In today's application, we're looking for something that shouldn't be in any plant. If we don't find it, PCR won't happen and we won't have copies made, and that will tell us that it didn't find any unnatural plant DNA or any DNA that shouldn't be in a plant, which means it would not be GM. Okay, so you have to be looking for a subsequence within the overall long stretch of DNA that you get from the sample. And so this long stretch of DNA, consider an entire chromosome, for instance, one enormously long DNA, but it's double-stranded. You're looking for a little sequence within there, a shorter sequence, much shorter. And a short sequence, of course, is defined by its endpoints. So that's what some of the components in the mixture are looking for. You're looking for a short sequence of nucleotides that make up one of the endpoints, and that's going to be on one of the two strands of DNA if it's found, and another short sequence of nucleotides at the other end point of that segment, and that's going to be on the other strand of DNA. So if you find those two, that defines the short sequence that the PCR process will amplify. And that's what you end up making copies of, not the whole chromosome. All right? Now let's compare it to what happens naturally in a cell. Because the PCR process really just mimics what the cell does naturally. So in a natural cell, how does denaturation take place? What does that? Helicase, which is what? It is an enzyme, as the name indicates, which means it's a protein, right? So, in other words, denaturation in a cell happens enzymatically. Well, we're going to denature because we have to, but we're not going to do it enzymatically. We're going to do it how? In PCR. Through heat. That's why this thing is called a thermal cycler. The temperature goes up and down each cycle. So if you get the DNA hot enough, there will be so much thermal motion that the hydrogen bonds won't be strong enough to keep the two strands from coming apart. That's why you can accomplish the same thing with heat that helicase does enzymatically in a cell. Okay? That gets the two strands apart. Next is annealing. Well, what kind of annealing occurs in a cell naturally? What is the next step after helicase breaks apart the strands? Yeah, you have to add an RNA primer, right? Why do you have to have an RNA primer when you're trying to build DNA? Because you can't add DNA nucleotides onto nothing. DNA can't be the first nucleotides that you lay down. You can only put DNA nucleotides on the end of a strand that already is partially built. RNA, on the other hand, can be laid down immediately. And so you have an RNA primer that's put down first in the cell, and then DNA nucleotides are added one at a time to that primer and to the growing strand. That's elongation, right? Once that's done in the cell, you have the problem that you don't have a pure DNA molecule, which is why you have to then go back and replace all the RNA primers with DNA of the corresponding type and sew it all together, right? Then you'll have a complete DNA molecule. Well, there's no reason to go through this step of putting RNA in and then getting rid of it later in the PCR process. We use not RNA primers, but DNA primers. And those are the things that are pre-made and that determine what the sequence is that you're looking for. So the PCR solution has too many copies of two different kinds of DNA primers in it. The primers are complementary in sequence to the little sequences at the two endpoints of the segment you're looking for. And therefore, if the segment doesn't exist, those primers won't anneal because they're not complementary. If it finds that, the primers will stick on there and then elongation will happen. Now, speaking of witches, how is elongation accomplished in the cell? No, RNA polymerase is used in transcription. Because transcription produces an RNA molecule. It's a slight misspelling. DNA polymerase is what you use when you're trying to build a DNA molecule. You're trying to polymerize or make a polymer of DNA. So it's DNA polymerase that does the job. Now, different species have their own versions of DNA polymerase. In fact, they have multiple versions within a species. But anyway, DNA polymerase is used for the elongation step naturally in a cell. We're looking at plant-based foods. So it would make sense, since we're using plant DNA, that we would use in the PCR process, in that mixture, plant DNA polymerase. But we can't do that. Why can't we do that? No, that's not why. But it's a good answer. I mean, it's good that you tried. Actually, this was the big stumbling block, the big breakthrough that had to occur in order for PCR to be a successful process. What did I say is the first step of every cycle? Denaturation. And how does that happen in PCR? What's the problem? Right. It's the denaturation step, since it's done thermally in PCR, would also denature DNA polymerase from a plant, which is a protein. It's like cooking the steak, and it's permanent. That first cycle would immediately destroy any plant DNA polymerase that you would use as an enzyme for the elongation step to follow. So they couldn't do that. They had the breakthrough was they had to find a naturally occurring DNA polymerase variety from a species that has no problem living at that denaturation temperature used in PCR. So they found that in a thermophilic bacterium that lives at boiling water temperatures. Its own version of DNA polymerase has no problem being at that temperature. And so it's not destroyed by the first step of the cycle, and therefore will still be there by the time that you get to the elongation step, which is when it's used. All right? So that's how they're very similar. They're just done. This was done in solution. The other's done in a cell. And every time you go through one of those steps, you double the amount of DNA that was there originally, right? Well, a cell only goes through those steps once because a cell needs just two copies when it's going to split into two cells. PCR keeps going through the process and therefore keeps doubling it. And this is why it's so useful in terms of amplification of the DNA sample, because it's exponential growth, right? Starts out a little slow. You go from one to two copies and then two to four. But it gets out of hand pretty quickly, right? If you program the thing to go through 40 iterations of the cycle, and if everything goes well, then you should make 2 to the 40th power copies. And that's a big number. So now you do have enough to work with for whatever your purpose is. For us, assuming that it does find that segment that shouldn't be there in a plant because of the primers we're using, it will amplify it to the point that we'll be able to see it banned out in an electrophoretic gel next week. That's the rationale. Let's actually look at the process just to drive it home. The slide that I'm showing you, this assumes that the DNA actually contains what you're looking for. Like I said, if it doesn't contain it, no amplification. But here, the segment actually exists in there, so the primers find their little sequences. The blue is the original DNA. Double-stranded, of course, gets denatured. One single strand has one endpoint that one type of primer will find. The other strand has the other endpoint that the other type of primer will find. But when those primers anneal, then elongation can occur under the action of DNA polymerase, adding new green strand to that primer. And it's going to continue as long as you let it. Because, you know, this blue DNA is very, very long. Much longer, goes way past the other endpoint, right? It's much bigger than you really are interested in. Well, really what stops the elongation process is that the program ramps it up to the next cycle. So the temperature goes back up for another round of denaturation, and the green and blue come apart. That's what really stops it. But by then, the green one, which is the part you're amplifying, the part you're making, was actually a little too long because it overshot the other endpoint, which isn't shown in this one. Okay? That's okay, though. In this next round, annealing can occur. Primer, there's many copies of each type of the two primers. A primer might anneal to the original blue again, which means you'll make another one too long. Or it might anneal to one of these slightly too long green ones. And if it does that, then elongation in the other direction will only go to that end point, and you'll end up making one that's exactly the right length, because it'll stop there. But each round, you still make a couple of these ones that are too long. You don't care about that, though, because each round you're making a greater and greater majority of the ones that are just exactly the right length. And by the time you go through 40 cycles, the number of these ones that are just a little too long is effectively zero compared to the millions and millions of copies that you make that are exactly the right length. All right? Does that make sense? Okay, so that's what we're doing. Let me also say that one of your solutions that you're using today, it's the stuff that's in the screw cap tubes that you have, is called Instagene Matrix. And Instagene Matrix acts as a chelating agent. Now, a chelating agent is something that will react with divalent cations like magnesium. A divalent cation is a positive ion with charge of 2, right? Which magnesium has. The reason this is a big deal is because when you use your mortar and pestle to grind your cells so the DNA comes out of the cells, you're now all of a sudden exposing DNA to cytoplasm where it wasn't exposed before. And in that cytoplasm are some nucleases, enzymes that break down DNA. Right? You don't want to break down a strand into individual segments. When you denature, all you do is break those weak hydrogen bonds. You don't break the phosphodiester covalent bonds that hold together adjacent nucleotides within a strand. They hold the strand together. If you dismantle the strand, all you have is a bunch of individual nucleotides, and you have no code anymore at all, right? No sequence. So you don't want to break the DNA into little chunks, which nucleases within the cell, but in the cytoplasm, out of the nucleus, would do. Well, nucleases, like many enzymes, including in your own body, need cofactors, things that need to get stuck to the enzyme to activate the enzyme. and magnesium is a common cofactor. If magnesium isn't stuck onto these nuclease enzymes, they don't function as nucleases. So it's like, so they won't do the job of cutting the DNA, and you don't want that to happen. So by putting your samples in a chelating agent, the Instigene matrix, those magnesium ions are taken out of solution and they're occupied with something else, and they therefore can't bind to these nuclease enzymes, and therefore the nuclease enzymes won't break your DNA sample apart. All right? I'll talk more about the contents next week, but I think that's enough to get you started. It's really a matter of very carefully following instructions today, and it doesn't take long if you work efficiently, but follow instructions to the letter. The heated water is over there, by the way, when you need it. We're doing lessons one and two. At the end of lesson one, it's written as though we're stopping for a week after lesson one. So when it says to put them on ice, just immediately go to lesson two. Now, every time we have this activity, every term that this course is offered, at least one group will say, you didn't give us enough of such and such solution. And that's never true, actually. We give you a little bit more than you need. We're just talking about microliters to begin with, so it's not much that we give you, but it's actually more microliters than you actually need. And so if you say that you've run out, almost certainly the reason is that you're not properly micropipetting. If you push your thumb all the way down until it stops, even assuming you've dialed in the correct volume, you're going to suck out more than what you've dialed in. Okay, so make sure you dial it in first on the micropipetter and then just push down to the first stop, the one that you could push farther through. Stop where you feel that. Then that'll suck up what you have, and you'll have enough that way. Okay.